Today on Piano Jazz, sitting in for Marion McPartland is one of her favorite pianists, two-time Grammy nominee Bill Charlap.
It's a privilege to be here with trumpeter, arranger, composer Randy Brecker, musician of great versatility, depth, and you've covered so much music over the years. It's incredible, so welcome.
Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for that very nice introduction.
Well, it's true. I've been listening to you play for as long as I can remember, and you're certainly one of my musical heroes.
Well, thank you.
I wanted to ask you about your early years and how you got started in music, and particularly, you grew up in Philly, didn't you?
I did. And Philly was a veritable melting pot of different styles of music, so I was very lucky meeting a lot of musicians at a very young age and being heavily influenced by my father, who was a piano player and who knew your father, as a matter of fact. I remember hearing about Moose, and I thought it was such a cool name as a kid because he talked about him all the time. But my dad was a wonderful pianist, songwriter, and singer, actually, and would have probably pursued music had he not also had an interest in law and having a family, et cetera, all the things that go with that. But music was his first love, and he was a big influence on myself and my brother.
Well, that's great to hear about that. I had known that there was some connection, that our parents had known each other, but I didn't know exactly what that was, so that's nice to hear. Of course, my dad was Moose Charlap, and he was a songwriter also.
Great songwriter.
Thank you. And my mom is Sandy Stewart, a great singer, and they're both from Philly, too. So that Philadelphia connection.
Small world.
Nice.
Philly is an incredible place as far as having produced so many musicians in so many different genres. It's just incredible. So I grew up listening to jazz on the radio, jazz downstairs in the living room, R&B with, actually, when I think about it, American Bandstand was born in Philadelphia, and we used to come home and watch that. Dick Clark used to have a lot of R&B bands that we would have normally seen had he not been a jazz fan. There was a lot of closet jazz fans on that show. Frankie Avalon was a trumpet player, a pretty good trumpet player, actually, that went to high school with Lou Tobacco, and his real name was Frankie Avalona. So there was a lot going on in Philly back then. Of course, this where Coltrane kind of spent his formative years, Dizzy Gillespie, the Heath Brothers, a local guy named Jimmy Oliver, a saxophonist by the name of Clarence C. Sharp, with whom I had the pleasure of playing with when I was a teenager. So and just to be around these guys and having two clubs to go to, Peps and Showboat, my father would take me and they'd let me, they got to know me so I could sneak in there whenever I want. It was a great, great childhood.
That sounds like a fantastic way to grow up in music. It's great talking to you, but I'd love to hear you play, and I know you've brought a stellar ensemble with you. Maybe you can introduce these musicians.
Well, this is our regular working group, right? On tenor saxophone and soprano, Ada Rovati, and on piano, Jill McCarron, the great Jill McCarron, and on bass, Mr. Steve LaSpina, and the other Steve on drums, Mr. Steve Johns. And we have had a lot of fun playing together the last few years, and this should be great.
Well, what are you going to play?
Well, the first tune I chose was kind of a tune that came about with the thought, what if Charles Mingus and Thelonious Monk had written a tune together? And I recorded this several years ago on an album called In the Idiom. And this is called There's a Mingus Among Us.
Okay. It's a great title.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank you.
What a great performance. The band sounds great, and you sound great.
Thank you.
And great tune. You can hear a Mingus among us.
Yeah, there's a little, definitely a little of both. Mingus key, Mingus phrase, kind of alternating with something that Monk would have done. And
Some of the rhythmic inflections.
And I love both of those guys. I had the pleasure of playing with Mingus later in his life, and for many years I've been a part of various Mingus big bands, Epitaphs and Dynasties,
yes,
run by the great Sue Mingus, so I have a deep connection there.
Did you mean by Mingus key, the key of D-flat?
Yeah, a lot of his tunes, he liked that key, and it's kind of a fun key to write in.
Yeah.
Playing, too.
Soulful key.
Yeah.
I think the first recording of that, the album that you made, if I remember correctly, it was Joe Henderson on tenor, Al Foster on drums, Ron Carter on bass, and Dave Kukowski at the piano. Was that one of your first recordings as a leader?
Well, it was my first recording in that context, I suppose, as a leader. I had done a lot of produced and more contemporary jazz records, you know, with Brecker Brothers and as a solo artist. So that was the first really full-fledged jazz quintet record that I had done, other than a record that had some elements of that in it. In 1968, my very first record was called Score, and there were some quintet tunes. And in fact, my 19-year-old brother at the time, Michael, had moved to New York, and that was his recording debut. But it had been a long time since I had recorded as a leader playing this kind of material. It was a lot of fun to do.
As you mentioned, your brother, Michael Brecker, I'm thinking about music in your family, and I know that you're surrounded with music all the time, and we just heard the brilliant playing of the tenor saxophonist in your group, who is Ada Rovati, and she is also your wife.
She is indeed, and we have a great relationship. It's nice to be married to someone who plays a B-flat instrument. That's the best part of it. We don't have to transpose.
Well, I can relate to that in the key of C. My wife is great pianist, Rini Rosnes.
Yes, indeed.
It's nice to be able to share that as well as everything else. Well, we'll have more in a minute with Randy Brecker and his quintet. Our program is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. I'm Bill Charlap, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. I was wondering, what were some of your first professional gigs?
Well, I have to go way back still to my time in Philadelphia, and I played with a lot of R&B bands, a couple kind of wedding bands. But my recollection of actually meeting some guys down there was under the aegis of Mr. James DePriest, who then was known as Jimmy DePriest, and he was a jazz drummer and also an organizer, so he put together various youth bands with people like myself and Lou Tobacken, and who I've stayed friends with all these years. But I moved to New York in 1966 and was lucky enough to kind of hook up pretty quickly. People had heard about my playing, I guess, through various competitions. I went to Indiana University, and we wanted a Notre Dame Jazz Festival in about 1965. Clark Terry was one of the judges, and when I moved to New York, he was kind enough to call me and have me join his big band. And then that just led to other things. There was so much music around then, so I started playing with Duke Pearson's big band, and eventually the Thad and Mel band, and a bunch of other larger groups around town.
By Thad and Mel, of course, I know you mean Thad Jones and Mel Lewis.
That's right. And eventually I joined Blood, Sweat, and Tears for a year. It's kind of make a long story short. They needed a trumpet player, and it was an interesting experience, and it brought me into that world for a year. But I left right before they sold 11 million copies, and to join Horace Silver, which was my first big jazz gig. And stayed with Horace for a year and a half with Billy Cobham and Benny Maupin and John B. Williams.
So what
that
a great
was
a, band.
That was a really excellent band.
Yeah, amazing. What was it about playing with Horace Silver? Anything specific that really stands out for you as something you really gleaned from that experience?
Well, I gleaned just about everything. How to be a strong band leader, but give the sidemen some leeway. I mean, he didn't give as much as some others, but he did give. He knew when to stop with telling you how to play, and he had all those great tunes. And he was also deeply embedded in the idea of playing a lot of different styles, drawing from a lot of different contexts to write, compose, and also play. So he played a lot of straight ahead stuff. We did some funkier stuff. We did tunes. You know, his body of work was like a narrative to his life. He'd visit somewhere and write a tune. So we'd do a tune like, for instance, Tokyo Blues or Cape Breton Blues. Each had a kind of a local flavor of where he had visited. So his palette was pretty wide, even though we harmonically maybe didn't stretch that much, but we played a lot of different styles of music, and he had a lot of work, and we played together a lot, so it was a real formative period of my life.
Maybe you'll play something else for us.
Okay, this next tune was actually written in the beautiful city of Shanghai 3 or 4 years ago, and it's a lot of fun to play, and I recorded it on a record called 34th and Lex a couple years ago, and this is called Shanghai.
This is also your composition?
This one is also my composition. Okay. This is a little more blues influence, but it kind of doesn't ever quite get to harmonically where you think it's going to go. It kind of throws you off constantly.
Can't wait to hear it.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Another great tune. Soulful. And it's really grooves. But it's got the sound of surprise also. A lot of surprises around the corner.
It, like I said, it doesn't harmonically ever quite go where you think it's going to go. So it's challenging to play over, but we have a good time. And this tune's great because it fits a lot of different contexts. I have a couple different bands, and it'll work as an electric tune if you want to really throw down some grooves. Sometimes we just play on the vamp, and other times it sounds good in the acoustic band too. So gotten a lot of mileage out of this one.
Well, beautiful. Well, after playing with Horace Silver, didn't you spend a little time in Art Blakey's band?
I did indeed for about a year. It was a little before I had started to really write formulate my own music, so to speak. I wish I had been a little further along in my development when I look back at that period, but Art was at the top of his game, and it was a lot of fun because I had, you know, grown up with all those records and to play Night in Tunisia and Moaning and all those tunes.
I'm sure, and with Art's unbelievable energy and fire and intensity, I'm sure there was nothing like that. Incredible rhythm sections and players. Speaking of great rhythm sections, you've got a great one here with Steve LaSpina at the bass.
The best.
And Joe McCarron at the piano and Steve Johns at the drums. Maybe you'll play something else for us.
Yeah, I think this time we chose a tune that was written by my wife, Ada Rovati, who hails from Mortara, Italy, and we were playing at a jazz festival in Cork, Ireland a few years back, and she wrote this tune, which has kind of an Irish vaunts about it. We needed a title for this tune, so drummer Adam Nussbaum thought of O Corco Mio.
The Randy Brecker Quintet with Ada Rovati on tenor saxophone.
Thank you.
That was great. Wonderful tune. Great spirit. It has really has that Celtic vibe with sort
yeah,
of a.
Yeah, it does. And
I enjoyed your humorous quote at the end. Also, I'm sure most people caught a little bit of Stephen Foster's "Oh, Susanna." It was great.
It's kind of popped out there.
Well, we'll have more in a minute with Randy Brecker and his quintet. You can find artist information, set lists, and more on our website, pianojazz.npr.org. I'm Bill Charlap, and this is Piano Jazz with Marian McPartland and friends. Randy, who were some of your first influences on the trumpet, and what drew you to the trumpet as your instrument?
Well, that goes back to Dad, who was a big trumpet fan, and also growing up in Philly, where Clifford Brown, when I was a child, was performing quite regularly. So I remember everybody talking about him, and Dad had all of his records, and I remember the day he was tragically killed in the car accident. I remember like that very clearly. Mm. So he was quite prevalent around the house, and as were other trumpet players like Dizzy, who Dad knew somewhat, and Miles, Chet Baker, Shorty Rogers. I guess they were foremost, but then there were a lot Art Blakey records, so I heard Kenny Durham for the first time, and people in the Blue Note stable like Donald Byrd. And Dad just loved the trumpet. When I was in third grade, 8 years old, outside Philly in this little school, they only had trumpets or clarinets available, so I grabbed the trumpet right away. And conversely, my brother got stuck with a clarinet. He was 3 years younger than I was, and he didn't want to play the same instrument, and they still only had trumpets or clarinets, so he was stuck with the inflictor for quite a few
inflictor,
years.
That's what Phil Woods calls the clarinet.
And Mike never took to the clarinet, but he did take to the saxophone, so that worked out really well.
He seemed to do well with the tenor saxophone.
He did pretty well with that thing.
Incredible, incredible giant, as are you. You know, your range of recording experience is really unbelievable. Everyone from James Taylor to Bruce Springsteen to Chaka Khan, George Benson, Parliament Funkadelic, Frank Sinatra, Steely Dan, David Sanborn, Horace Silver, Jaco Pastorius, Frank Zappa, and that's very much a partial list. How did you get so ensconced in the recording world?
Well, you know, things sometimes just happen. You're in the right place at the right time. I don't know if that was accurate, because I don't know if it was the right thing to do all those recordings. I probably would have developed more as an improviser if I hadn't been so busy when I was young doing all these recordings. But on the other side of the coin, it was a great experience. All the situations were so professional, and all the musicianship on all these various sessions were so high that I look back upon those years with really fond memories, even though it was a lot of work.
But talent had something to do with that too, not just luck.
You know, we were playing around New York a lot as a group. With number one, the band Dreams that we put together in the early 70s, and we became kind of the house band at a club downtown called the Village Gate.
When you say we put the band together, are you talking about yourself and your brother Michael?
Yeah, myself, my brother Michael, a wonderful trombonist named Barry Rogers.
Oh, yeah.
Two singer-songwriters, Jeff Kent, Doug Lubon, and Billy Cobham on drums. And we did two critically acclaimed albums for Columbia Records. They sold actually decently, and we were one of the first really improvisational jazz rock bands, and we were together about 3 years, but then
the records are collector's items now.
Yeah, they're still available, and they are, but the vinyl definitely are.
Yeah.
John McLaughlin formed Mahavishnu and stole our drummer, Billy Cobham, who literally invented that style of playing back then. But we could never really find somebody to replace him, so that was the end of the band. We auditioned maybe 60 drummers, but back then nobody was playing like that, so we finally just gave up.
Do you feel that band set the stage for the Brecker Brothers?
Yeah, it definitely had a part and parcel in starting Brecker Brothers. We went on to play together with Billy Cobham's group for a couple of years after that, after he left Mahavishnu, and then we were ready to start our own band. I had been writing a lot in my spare time, and we put together the first record with mostly stuff that I had written at the time.
Well, I remember some Skunk Funk and the record that came from. Do you still play some Skunk Funk?
Well, that's become our signature tune, and we have a special kind of what I call the bebop version of some Skunk Funk. So I think we can pull that out of the hat if
you'd
like.
I would love to hear it.
Okay. Thank you.
smoking.
Well, thanks. We haven't played that one in a while, but it's always fun to come back to it.
Well, it's great to hear
challenging.
That. Challenging. Yeah, absolutely. It's great to hear that in a straight-ahead context. I'm so used to hearing it with the backbeat. It works. Well, there's more to come with Randy Brecker and his quintet. Our program is made possible in part by the Friends of Piano Jazz and is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. I'm Bill Charlap, and this is Piano Jazz with Marion McPartland and friends. Randy, when did you start composing?
Well, it was in the, I suppose, late 60s, early 70s. I had written a little for this first record that I did in 1968, but I don't think I was at the top of my game yet. And I hadn't really studied composition. It was just a question of really learning voicing, sitting at the piano. When electronics came in, I kind of fell in love with my clavinet. And
the electronic keyboard made by Hohner that was like an electric harpsichord in a way.
Yeah.
But a funky one.
Love the sound, and I love the sound. I eventually got a Fender Rhodes, and I would just ping-pong back and forth between two cassette players was my multi-track. And I literally just would sit there for hours writing. I was doing a lot of studio work also at the time during the day. So it was kind of an outlet. You know, I looked at it upon it as kind of as a hobby, and I learned as I went. And I've since filled in a lot of blanks by studying some arranging books, some keyboard books, and my harmonic palette is a little fuller these days, but that was really challenging, and I just learned as I went. And it's why some of the music is somewhat unusual harmonically, because basically I was just doing it by ear.
Well, I guess that's how we do everything in music. Finally, in the final analysis, if you can hear it, you can have it.
Yeah, and I could play it all on the piano as I did it too. I sit there and I could play all my tunes. I couldn't do it now. And I was also good at just keeping cassettes. I fell in love with cassette. I remember when I got my first cassette player with Horace Silver, and I fell in love with just the fact of being able to record everything. So I had just stacks of cassette players. It was like putting a giant puzzle together, some of those tunes.
The modern day version of a composer's sketchbook.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you certainly have found a compositional voice that is your own. Great tunes.
Well, thank you.
Would you play another one of your compositions?
Well, sure. We're going to do a tune now that's a little more modal in nature. It's called Moontide. Thank you.
another beautiful composition. I like the way that it mixes the sort of rural type of modality with the dissonance, beautifully balanced.
Well, that's another older tune, and we enjoy playing it because it's very open. It goes a lot of different directions every night, so we can play with it.
Well, the band sure sounds great.
We have a lot of fun together.
Well, I could go on like this all day, but unfortunately we're running out of time. It's been great talking to you and listening to the band, Jill McCarron at the piano, Steve Johns at the drums, Steve LaSpina at the bass, and your wife, Ada Rovati, at the tenor saxophone.
Well, thank you so much.
I would love to play something with you.
Well, that'd be great.
What do you feel like playing?
Well, how about a little All the Things You Are?
Works for me.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Randy.
Well, thank you, Bill. It's just a pleasure to play with you.
You've been listening to Marian McPartland's Piano Jazz with guest host Bill Charlap. Today's guest was trumpeter Randy Brecker. Join us each week at this time as Piano Jazz brings you other outstanding artists for conversation and improvisation. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. The producer is Sherry Hutchinson. Recording engineer, Duke Marcos. Assistant recording engineer, Tyler Hartman. Mastering engineer, David Mitchell. Engineering assistant, Dale Anderson. Production coordinator, Grant Jackson. The executive producer is Elaine Freeman. We love to hear from you. Our email address is pj@scetv.org. Our postal address is 1101 George Rogers Boulevard, Columbia, South Carolina, 29201. To find out more about the artists and music selections on Piano Jazz, visit our website at pianojazz.npr.org. There, you'll be able to listen to a recent program and also find a link to our free weekly preview podcast, Piano Jazz Shorts. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and NPR. Contributors include the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. This is NPR.